So, can you talk to me a little bit about John Muir's work and what in particular inspired you to really delve into that world?
You know, I think it's reading his early works when I was an adolescent. You know, my summer in the Sierra really kind of reminded me of all those things that I really liked about nature, but I didn't know how to articulate. You know, what is it that drives somebody to appreciate the beauty, the sounds, the wildlife, and how do you articulate that in words? And I remember just reading him when I was like 13, 14 years old and being like, ah, this guy really has it nailed. You know, he's really inspiring me.
Absolutely. And I love what you said about not really knowing how to articulate something. And it's something that I've always been curious about from a documentary, like a documentary perspective, because you are playing this game a little bit. Because, okay, on the one hand, you have the existing body of work, right? You have the existing articulation of, in this case, John Muir. But you, as the director, also get to sort of articulate how you want to present that body of work to the audience. Can you talk a little bit about what your process was for that?
Well, it's a little different in the sense that this is not a biopic. So it's not a historical BBC sort of presentation on John Muir,
Sure.
but it's more of an exploration of talking to a whole bunch of other people, theologians, scientists, writers, artists, about how John Muir influenced them. And that is really kind of what drives the story.
Yeah.
And then it's my narrative of where that interests me that kind of takes it to the next step.
That's fantastic. So you're sort of curating perspectives about Mir.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting that.
That's fantastic. What inspired you to pursue that format?
Well, there's a film that we did prior to this one on a saint, on Saint Hildegard of Bingham, and that was also I think of her as the patron saint of creativity. And within that film, once again, I went out and interviewed a whole bunch of different people because I was curious who she was and how this woman who lived 800 years ago was still influencing people. Now, John Muir is much more of a contemporary in this time, but like with Hildegard, there's people that are very focused on her, very focused on her energy, very focused on the message that she was giving to us so long ago.
That's great. And for our listeners who aren't so familiar with some of those messages, can you kind of speak to what your personal takeaways were?
For John Muir. So for John Muir, I think it's there's this sense when we go into nature that we're going out to recreate, perhaps, right? That we're going to get our heart rate up, and there's something that happens to us afterwards that we feel kind of clean, we feel good, we feel one with nature. And I've always kind of been curious about what's going on there. Florence Williams, who's in the film, she had written this article on National Geographic, The Brain on Nature. And she went through and did all the science about what actually happens. And at the end of that article, she said, "We really still don't know what's happening." And so that's really the area that I'm going into in the film, is what is that experiential moment that happens, and how does it help us develop spiritually?
Yeah.
And why is nature so important? And it's not just about nature as being the wilderness, getting as far away from people, but nature can be found in the city. You know, the studio, we're in nature. You know, the table is, well, I think maybe the table's for mica, but let's say the table was wood, you know, but the building's built of bricks. So we are surrounded by nature. And we tend to kind of like separate ourselves from that and think that we are different from nature. Nature is far away. We have to make a journey to get into nature, but we are obviously surrounded by nature.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that a lot. I love that idea of maintaining a very acute awareness of the intimacy of, you know, that universal human experience with nature, no matter where we are on this planet. So that's excellent. You know, a lot of times people, when they're putting together works, I've t spoken to a lot of different artists, be it filmmakers like yourself, or, you know, kind of curating other kind of things like Alia earlier is curating, you know, choosing different poets to present in a workshop. And I found that some artists really have an intended takeaway that they're shooting for, that they're really hoping that audiences walk away with something. And then others are the exact opposite, right? They're not trying to, you know, force any interpretation on the audience. They're just putting it out there for you to take what you take with it. Did you find yourself, is there any sort of takeaway you're hoping audiences walk out of the Crystal Theater with, or is it up for grabs, or is it a hybrid?
I'm actually seeing a takeaway, which is just beautiful. My friend David Teitler, who lives here in Carbondale, I remember when he saw the film, he said to me afterwards, he said he wanted to go off and do a solo trip. And he does do solo trips. He does like 5 days. But this time he wanted to do, I think, 10 days.
Oh, wow.
So what we're seeing are people who already have a connection to nature are just getting re-inspired to that. I think where I'm also really trying to get the film into are the people that don't have that connection that we have here in Colorado so much, and to get them just to really appreciate the value of what nature offers us.
Yeah, no, so. That's beautiful. And it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong because I haven't seen your film yet, but it sounds like, you know, somebody who lives in a more urban setting, like if you live in Denver, for instance, right, that you are presented with that opportunity to appreciate the nature that does exist around you, even if you don't have Mount Zobris staring at you every single day, right? There's that opportunity to explore, quote unquote, different avenues of nature, because I think sometimes we are cornered into forcing a distance that, oh, we're not in nature unless we're in Rocky Mountain National Park, or we're not in nature unless we're, you know, out on the trail. And it sounds like you're offering some perspectives that speak otherwise.
I think so. And I also think it has to be focused to not just on a certain age group that has the mobility or the resource, the financial resources to go out, but for somebody to sit and have a plant that they're gazing into, or to sit and look up at the clouds. It's those little moments that are so important. And the film actually touches on so many of those as reminders, as kind of a visceral, experiential reminder of what it's like to step into nature and to hear from other people talking about their experience of awe and of the wilderness.
Thank you so much for mentioning the financial aspect of that, right? Because I do think that if you think, you know, for me, I'm a big skier, but there's a big financial barrier of entry into that particular recreation. And the idea that you don't need to have a certain amount, a certain number in your bank account in order to drop into your own meditative moment or your own spiritual moment to appreciate your connection with what's immediately available to you. I think it's really easy today to forget that. So thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah, it is. It's hard, especially when I remember buying my ski ticket in the 1970s. It was $9.
Oh my gosh.
So that's like a 1300% increase.
Oh man. I could do that math. I don't want to do that math. No. It'll make me so sad. I understand that, kind of breaking news, the showing at the Crystal right now is sold out, correct?
That's correct. And when we jumped on the phone this morning, we were able to set up another screen on Friday the 14th. Doors
Absolutely.
Open at 5.
At 5. Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. 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 That being said, for listeners who are feeling inspired right now and definitely do want to see that, we have two seats or two tickets set aside. Thank you so much, Michael, for making this happen. But we are in a position to do a ticket giveaway. So I am going to continue my conversation, but in the next, 4 or 5 minutes, any listeners who would like to call the studio at 963-2976. Again, our studio number is 963-2976. We do have two tickets to the sold out show, and I already have people calling. So that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Michael, is there anything we didn't talk about that you'd like to discuss while I take this call?
Sure. I'd just like to just say that the film, that the Hildegard film and the John Muir film are part of a series that we're doing underneath the Unruly Mystics. And we're working on the third film right now, which is Spirituality and Curiosity, using Albert Einstein as the unruly mystic. And it's kind of curious to think about science as being a spiritual pursuit.
Right. I actually love that. And also to my caller, you started calling and I just dropped you. So for all means, 963-2976, if you would like to see that sold out screening of the John Muir, not unholy mystic. What is it?
Unruly.
Unruly mystic. Dang it. You can always tell if I have a script on something, right? But no, I actually personally, that again, speaks really well to me. I love this idea of exploring the spirituality behind science, because both some in some ways are just kind of magic, right? Just from that human experience, when you look, take a step back and look at what is possible, right? It's magic. And regardless of how you experience that, whether that's a spiritual realm or a scientific realm, I don't personally think the two can be, need to be mutually exclusive.
And it's interesting with the landing on Mars this week with the InSight.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember asking Florence Williams about what would it be like to go to Mars? Would that feel like nature? And she didn't think so. She thought we'd have a completely different reaction to it. So I think that remains to be seen, because I think it's all part of nature, not just this earth base.
Yeah. It's funny. I love when you were speaking, the word that literally came to mind for me was otherworldly, right? How literal is that? And we think of nature. Oh, Diana. Yes. I just got your note. So, we do have a winner for our two tickets. Diana Frontenot, Gavin has your information. I will pass it off to Michael to make sure that we have two seats, reserved for you in our sold out showing. So yes, coming back to, I love ticket giveaways. They're so much fun. It's probably, that's probably one of my favorite things of being able to do radio. But I love that idea of otherworldly, right? And yeah, is that still our experience of nature, or is that nature of literally another world? And what, like, what's, there's just so much exploration, like you said, that's just future conversations to explore.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of going back to what you asked at the beginning, it is really about where I'm curious too, and where I start to meet people that end up coming into the film.
Yeah.
And then they come to you in the audience and you get to learn from them. And there's so many amazing people out there who are, not to say that they're not discovered, but they're available when you start to ask them these questions. So we did a screening up in Fort Collins, and there was an elderly man who was trying to get into the theater, and it was sold out. And I was like, oh, no, let me help him in there. And it was, I found out afterwards, it was Dr. Ralston Holmes III, who's a professor at retired professor at CSU in philosophy. He's known as the father of nature ethics.
Oh, wow.
And we ended up interviewing him for the next film. And he had all this information about Einstein that was so precious and so on topic. And he shared with us when he was a student at Yale that he had actually seen Einstein. And the students would wait for Einstein to leave his office and walk across the street.
Wow.
Because they were too intimidated.
Of course. It's like, here's my hero. Oh, wait, no. That's so great. I think you might have possibly answered my next question already, which was, in this experience of making this film, was there any one particular anecdote that sticks out in your mind as sort of a particularly favorite part of creating the film? Would you say that was it, or is there another story?
Well, so that's for the new film, but, mm-hmm. but for the Muir film, it was taking my 15-year-old son at the time to Yosemite.
Oh.
To film Ranger Shelton Johnson, who's an African-American ranger there, who was in the Ken Burns documentary and is a favorite of many of the screenings when we do it. We're going to be taking the film there in April to show it to the Yosemite Park Rangers. And it was just my son going, oh my God, Dad, this is as beautiful, if not more so, than what you had told me. And he was 15.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, talk about inspiring people and making nature accessible to do it with somebody as close to, as your own son. That's magic. That's magic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so, so much, Michael Conti, for joining us. I am so excited for your film, but it sounds like I'm going to have to wait until December 14th.